Welcome to The Mortgage Life, a space for down-to-earth conversations about how mortgages contribute to your life.
Well, that sounds canned and maybe a little boring.
What? There are so many parts to the mortgage industry and real estate finance we can explore and share with our listeners.
Okay, you're right. You're right, Mindy. Our goal is to help secure our clients' financial future.
I'm Pete Solomosi.
I'm Mindy Bodwin.
And I'm Sue Solomosi. We're your hosts. Welcome to The Mortgage Life. So today's episode is on building your empire or your portfolio, whichever you choose to call it. I like the term empire.
It's very Star Wars.
It's funny, my mind didn't go there. To a certain subset of the population, it will be Star Wars related. To me, I'm thinking like, you know, a couple houses to major developments. You know, that's the empire aspect.
Right. Or even a basement suite.
Is an empire just in your perspective, though? Like, could your home? That's a reach.
It's your own universe.
It's whatever you need to tell yourself to get through the day.
And what color is the sky?
Well, our son asked me earlier this week. He said, "Dad, what color is the sky?" And I said, "Blue." And he's like, "No, it's actually clear." So we're not going to get into what color is the sky. So I think that's a science question.
Grade 5 philosophy.
Exactly. So if you haven't already listened to our prior two episodes, have a listen to RAM part 1 and 2, in which we talk about the difference between short-term rentals and long-term rentals. And today we're actually going to get into how to finance these things.
So we were looking at trying to bring a guest onto this episode when really what it came down to is that we're doing this from the broker perspective, right? So this is what we do. So you just get the three of us today.
But and it makes sense to have the three of us because every single lender has different policies when it comes to getting a mortgage for a rental property, or if you're doing a refinance and you own rental properties, how they include that rental income or other aspects. So when we were looking at maybe bringing a lender on, we quickly realized that that's only going to be one small margin of the actual market out there. So I think it's better to look at this in a more general sense about, you know, what you can and can't do generally. And then there are some specific situations that we can dive into.
For sure. And I know for sure too, Mindy, that you've had this conversation multiple times over the past couple of years, especially when people are trying to get a little bit more creative with their financial portfolio.
Yes. And the truth is you can only get so creative, unfortunately.
air quotes.
It's so true. And the reason that we have to be creative and we have to kind of know these lender policies is because this world actually kind of exists. If we can go back to the comic book universe, there's two different universes here. One is what actually happens. So a lot of people that are looking to buy into an investment.
Are you in the Spider-Verse? Is that what we're talking about?
So you'll think about the actual reality. Like, what is my cash flow like? I can afford the mortgage payment. The cash flow is covered by the rental. That's what actually will happen in your world. But in the mortgage universe, you will have a certain amount of qualification that has to happen. So we actually have to know what the lenders will include. And sometimes they'll only include a certain percentage. So we're going to get into how we can actually get you into that mortgage.
Wouldn't it be nice though, if we can just take, say, like you bring in $1,000 a month in rent that covers your $1,000 a month in property costs, boom, we have a mortgage, but it doesn't work like that. It's really not that simple.
But kind of back to the basics here. So what are some basic parameters when looking at buying a rental property?
Number one, you want to think about whether it's a short-term rental or a long-term rental. So taking back to RAM episodes 1 and 2, decide, I guess, just like our tips for purchasing. Number one, what is your purpose for this property?
What about number two?
I don't remember what number two was.
Well, so regardless of if it's short-term or long-term, it cannot be CMHC insured.
Right.
So what that means is your minimum down payment is going to be 20%. And for some people, that's a barrier to entry. So not everybody has 20% of the purchase price to invest into the property upfront. So basic requirement for sure.
For sure. And you also need to consider the property itself. So your suites, or however many suites or rooms you're renting out, each suite where we can pull rental income from has to be self-contained, meaning it has its own entry, it has its own kitchen, it has its own bathroom, and I believe it has to have a bedroom with a closet.
Yeah. And again, it's sort of one of those, you know, some lenders prefer it to be a legal suite, some don't, but it does have to be fully self-contained, as Sue said. So where we can differentiate is, hey, I'm buying a 5-bedroom house. I'm going to use rental income because I'm renting out 3 of the bedrooms. No, that's not how it works. It would have to be a 4-plex with 4 separate suites to use those 3 separate rental streams.
So complex. And this is why this is more of a discussion piece as to the various things that the lenders do look for. We had 3 points there. The first point was that you got to figure out what your purpose is. Second point is that it can't be insured by mortgage insurers, so you have to have at least 20% down. Third point was that the suite has to be self-contained. So whether it's its own unit off on its own, or whether it's a suite within another dwelling, so it's in a house, they have to be self-contained. So look for those things first. And now we get into the various lender policies and how we can qualify.
All the different policies. Now, this is always the fun part of my job, is people will call and say, I'm interested in buying this. Can I make it work? And that's when we kind of dive into, number one, you know, what is their income and what's their basic mortgage application? But then what is their purpose with this property? And can I find a lender whose policies fit so that we can get this property for this person? So one of the big things that you see with people building empires, real estate investors, is the number of properties they own. So some lenders will limit the number of individual properties. Some lenders will limit the amount of individual doors. So for example, you can have one title for a 4-plex, but it has 4 doors. So for some lenders, they'll allow multiple 4-plexes, whereas some will only allow one. So that's one of the big sort of barriers right off the hop, is we got to look at that package sort of all together. And again, what their goals are, because if they are buying property number 4, for example, but their intention is to keep going, then we have to try to find lenders that will allow for to expand beyond that before we go into the commercial side.
Right. So basically what you're saying is you can do a certain number of rentals under that residential program. And then once they're exceeding that certain number, then it's almost like you're doing this as a business. Therefore, it is a commercial loan.
You guys, I have to tell you something. I just looked up the definition of empire. Empire comes from Old French imperium, related to imperare, which is to command. It's talking about extensive operation or sphere of activity you are in command of. Ooh. So that's the actual definition of empire. But for the purposes here, we're talking about rental properties.
Hang on a sec. So if we've got a client that is doing the rental property acquisition, can we call them an emperor?
Sounds a lot better than slumlord.
That's true. This is very true.
I just wanted to elaborate on that commercial aspect quickly here. So if you think about 2 silos, residential, commercial, most, I'd say, small emperors, not wanting to like build shopping malls and buy shopping malls type thing, are trying to stick within that residential channel. And the reason being is you don't have lender fees. You typically don't have broker fees. You typically get lower interest rates. But taking it back to the short-term versus long-term, that's another reason why we like to differentiate between the two, because not all residential lenders look at short-term rentals as a residential investment. A lot of them look at that as a more commercial enterprise. So another differentiation between those two.
I think an aspect we need to look at is what the income that we're considering varies depending on whether the property is the subject property. So it's the property in question that we're working on mortgaging, or if it's a non-subject property, it's a supplemental property where you're just bringing in that income and you're trying to acquire another.
Exactly. And there's different percentage inclusions in
that's a mouthful.
The rental income. You know, percentage you can use 80% or 50%. Is it non-subject? Is it subject? Is it standalone? Is it a suite?
Are we adding the income back to the gross income? Are we doing an offset of the debts?
Yes, it's different for every single lender. And again, this is why knowing your purpose, having your plan, communicating that to us so that we can make this work for you. But yeah, it's very complicated.
Because all those different calculations end up resulting in different debt service ratios, because that's really what the lenders are looking at. And some might be more favorable than others. So knowing that whole picture for us as your brokers really helps us to place that mortgage at the proper lender and the lender that will allow for the greatest amount of that income to be included or whatever gets you to qualify for that mortgage.
And just another factor when we're talking about using rental income and the various ways that it is included or excluded, lenders are different in what document they want to see to prove how much rental income is being earned. So that's the other piece is you may think that you're buying this house and the suite is going to rent out for $2,500 a month and you're, you know, off to the races, but the lender may not see that. So they're going to ask an appraiser to do a letter of economic rents in a lot of cases, especially if you're in the acquisition phase. Whereas if you're doing a refinance or equity takeout, a lot of times they're going to look for a lease agreement to prove that you're earning that income.
If you already have a rental and that's part of your portfolio, then obviously the lender's going to say, well, you should be able to prove what that rental is. And that's where those lease agreements and the proof that you've actually put the leases, the income on your taxes, that's where those documents are going to be asked for. On something that you're acquiring, when you're buying a new place, you're not going to be able to see it because you may not even have access to whatever the current rents are. So that's where that economic rent letter might be more valuable to the lender.
Okay, so we've covered the income aspect. How much of that rental income can actually be used to qualify for your mortgage or to help your portfolio? But let's talk about the down payment portion. 20% is a substantial amount, and not everybody has 20% of a purchase, you know, a couple $100,000 or whatever it is sitting in their bank account. So what are our options? What are investors' options where this money can come from?
What we commonly see when climbing the property ladder, which was what Pete was talking about earlier, when you purchase a home and then a couple of years down the road, you want to acquire a subsequent home and use the first as a rental, they do an equity takeout, which is essentially a refinance, right? And the refinance can be structured into several different products.
Well, so you're basically taking money out of your existing property to get that down payment. So you could do that in the form of a home equity line of credit. That's typically the case where a client might not exactly know what they are going to buy. And with the home equity line of credit, it's set up as a revolving line of credit. You can use it when you want to. So it sets you up for the future. And so you could do that, or you can do a refinance, as you mentioned, Mindy, and that refinance, you're taking out the full amount of whatever you want. And you might have an idea of the property that you want to buy. So you may be able to just take out the amount of money to put that 20% down payment on the new one.
So whether you're pulling money out of your existing equity in a property you already own, if you do have money in a savings account, if you've put money into an investment account specifically earmarked for a future purchase, something we do need to remember, and this goes back to the income qualification, is that we still need to make sure that you qualify for both of those mortgages. So if you're refinancing your existing property and purchasing a new one, we need to make sure you can carry both of those mortgages comfortably.
Exactly.
Or uncomfortably, depending on how you feel about investment.
And this is where the how much rent does this property earn question comes in, because cash flow is important.
And I think this actually is a really nice lead in to a few misconceptions that we see out in the market when it comes to buying a rental property.
Can I do the first one?
Okay, I'm going to set this up. So one of the first misconceptions, Mindy, is...
this is my favorite, and I have been asked this before. Unfortunately, no, you cannot buy real estate without income, without some sort of guaranteed employment income or, you know, spousal income or whatever it may be. It's got to be guaranteed income. I've had calls where, say, somebody's got a property that they own, they're not currently working, there's no other source of income, but this is a rental property and it earns X amount per month. And they want to use that property to purchase a new property, just the income from that property. Unfortunately, no, that doesn't work.
It doesn't tend to work because of the last thing which we talked about, which was that you need to qualify for those mortgages. So like Sue said, in order to be able to use the funds from a refinance, you actually have to qualify for that refinance. And because rental income is not always fully 100% used, it tends not to allow you to qualify for those additional funds.
Especially not right now when our qualification rates are so high. But I think this is maybe the tipping point between residential investing and commercial investing, right? Because when you get to that emperor status and you've right. got multiple properties or buildings with income generating all over the place, that's a whole different portfolio structure than what we're talking about here, which is that more entry point to an empire.
Right. Okay, so let's get to a second misconception. Mindy.
And we've already sort of touched on this, but again, I think when people are thinking about acquiring property 2 or 3 and they want to pull the equity out of their existing in a refinance or a HELOC, they forget that they have to qualify for that mortgage plus the new one that they're looking to acquire. So it's more than just a simple calculation because the rental income, as we keep saying, isn't always 100% translated into usable income going forward.
Which actually brings us nicely to the point 3 for misconceptions. And I want to set this one up a little bit. A lot of people might have heard of the BRRRR method, which is buy, renovate, rent, refinance, repeat. So you're basically buying a place to add value to it. You're going to pull out that value, rent it out, and then you're going to do this over. And the money that you've pulled out of that refinance, you're going to put into a new place. So while it's a great concept, Mindy, what is some of the misconceptions about that and just being able to do that time and time again?
And this is just kind of coming from my personal experience, having bought, renovated, rented, and not so much refinanced, but repeated. You do need a lot of money up front. You run into that qualification crunch, especially with the rates are right now. So unless you have a substantial employment income or have some sort of corporate structure that is, you know, acquiring real estate commercially, you're going to hit a wall come qualifying for the next property. So for me, it's money in the bank up front. You need a lot of time to manage this kind of a scenario, and you need a really, really solid financial plan. Your financial planner, your mortgage broker, legal team, accountant team, it becomes quite complicated. I think it's sort of based on some assumptions. Number one, you know, it sounds easy and, you know, how to make millions of dollars in real estate, but the assumptions
would
be...
There's books on this.
Yes. Number one, you can afford it. Well, can you? What if 3 of your properties no longer rent? Are you going to be able to make those mortgage payments? The second assumption is that after you renovate it, it's going to be worth more. What if there's a downturn in the economy?
Like we just seen.
What if there's another pandemic? What if there's another financial crisis?
Right.
You know, the third is that you can tolerate the risk. What if there's a life change? What if there's a change in your job or family scenario? Other assumption, continually increasing property values. Now, this is a little bit harder to see in our current market because we have experienced those huge price trajectories. However, the past 8 months, again, I'm going to timestamp this. Sorry, we're in the summer of 2023. There has been some adjustments to price. And then finally, unless you're, you know, a bazillionaire, you're kind of putting all your eggs into one basket in this case, right? So you really are exposing yourself to a lot of market and interest rate risk.
And I like that you finish that off on the concept of risk. If you're looking from a lender's perspective, they are evaluating these exact points for what the risk level is for them to lend you the money to buy this property. So they're looking to see if you can afford it, if it's going to increase in value, if you're going to do some renovations, what the market itself is doing, what our interest rates are doing, what our qualification concepts are doing. So this is how a lender is deciding whether or not they can lend to you. So there's just some really, really honest questions to ask yourself before you jump into this investing game.
Mm-hmm. And just to kind of cap off the misconceptions part, I think Mindy mentioned a really important piece as the fourth thing to look out for there, but that property values increase over time. We have in British Columbia experienced a lot of property value growth, especially over the last decade and a half. It's really been in the last year that we've actually seen some reversal of that, but it's already starting to go back up again. So that's something that has happened, but you can't always count on it. I think that it's just a thing to think about, and that's part of your risk calculation to say, is it reasonable to think that property values are going to keep increasing? So just keep that in mind. And then the last bit that we have to be really conscious of, especially in British Columbia, because of the Residential Tenancy Act, is that rents can't necessarily be increased as much as something like the rate of inflation or the amount of your mortgage payments might increase if you're on a variable or adjustable rate mortgage. So be conscious of the rules and the regulations in the environment in which you're buying these rental properties.
I think the base of that point, Pete, what you're saying that rents can't be increased is that as interest rates have increased, as inflation has increased, cost of goods, the cost of your coffee in the morning, your milk from the grocery store, your toilet paper, all of these costs are increasing, but your margin of profit is shrinking because you can't increase the rates fast enough to compensate for everything else costing more money.
Exactly.
So you're losing your potential for financial gain.
Right.
Property taxes have all gone up. Insurance rates have all gone up. Utilities have gone up. Water usage rates have gone up.
Right.
They're all factors that these are all like fixed costs when you own real estate.
Right. And we've kind of left this a little bit. I think I don't want to make this a doom and gloom thing, but
I was feeling a little doomy and gloomy.
The important thing is that if you're knowledgeable and you're aware of these things, then you can build that into your game plan. And that, again, goes back to our very first point. What is the purpose of it? And know what your game plan is. Because if you're aware of all these things and you can price that into whatever you're doing to build your empire, then it's all possible.
Do, 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 do. Do you know impossible is actually I'm possible? So
I love it.
It all comes down to having a solid plan. That's it, right? You have a solid plan. You're honest with yourself. You do have a financial cushion I would recommend highly, but it's doable. It's 100% a reasonable way of building wealth.
And sometimes plans just take longer than you would expect. It's like building small habits. Building an empire takes time. Building your habits take time.
Eating an elephant takes time. This is The Mortgage Life.
We look forward to continuing the conversation.
So come back and listen.